Hello, dear listeners, and welcome to the final interlude episode for iteration one of Tarot for the End of Times. In this episode, I'm going to be answering some of your questions right here on the pod, and you should know that after this episode, I'm going to be on a bit of a hiatus as I prepare for iteration two of the pod, and because I'm going to be working on a few new offerings that I hope to introduce to you in the next few months. If you want to stay in the loop, go ahead and check out the links in the show notes, okay? And I'll share a little bit more about this as the episode goes on, but for now, I'm going to give you a little hint, okay? I'm working on something to help y'all get in right relationship with some of the shadowier archetypes of the major arcana, so stay tuned. For now, let's answer these brilliant questions. I tried to pick questions that came up the most frequently, and also I chose ones that kind of get into more of the ethical underpinnings of this craft, so just know that I did try to consolidate as much as possible. To protect your privacy and also respect the vulnerability that comes with asking a question on a public forum, I'm going to keep these questions anonymous, all right? So thank you all so much for submitting them and for your extended patience as I got my shit together. Okay, so let's jump right in. First question, will you be covering the minor arcana? All right, cool. I can finally for real answer this. So the short answer is yes. The slightly longer answer is you should sign up for my newsletter, Snakeskin Tarot News, because that's where I talk about next steps for the pod and also for Snakeskin Tarot. I have some things on the proverbial stove right now that I'm really excited to unveil when the time comes. So I invite you to sign up so I can tell you about the things when they happen, okay? So like I said earlier, I'm going to leave a link in the show notes. And if you sign up between now and March 31st, you're going to get access to a 10% off coupon code that you can use for your first reading or your next reading. This is just my way of saying thank you for rocking with me for like 4 years. That's like a whole gay relationship. And also, I'm going to be raising my prices at the end of March for my one-on-one services. So this would really be the time, okay, to just take advantage of this coupon code and book your reading. For updates like this, and to also get a closer look at my own process as a tarot reader and business owner who does spirit-led work, I invite you to get plugged in, sign up for the newsletter, and you'll learn a little bit more about what's to come in a more timely way. So, thank you so much for your question. All right, next one. Sometimes my intuition feels bogged down by the sheer volume of information that tarot requires you to memorize. Any tips for internalizing the card meanings? Love this question. Thank you so much for asking. Again, the short answer is yes. Not only do I have a tip, but I actually have a tool that I can share with you right now to help you internalize the meanings of each of these cards. So if you're one of my clients, you would have received this via my newsletter last Monday. But if you're just getting on board now, I'm going to leave a link to this tool in the show notes too. So check it out. Okay, so making playlists is how I show my love, and y'all are not excluded from that, okay? I made a playlist to honor our journey with the major arcana, and each song corresponds with a different archetype. So these are actually songs that I personally associate with each archetype, and I found music to be an incredibly helpful tool for understanding not just the major themes of each card, but also like the mood and the vibe, which can be a bit harder to articulate in words. I think there's a reason why so much early childhood education involves the use of music, because it freaking works, especially when you're new to a subject. So I invite you to use that playlist for tarot study sessions or if you're working with a specific archetype. Using multiple senses and creating like a somatic experience with the cards can be an incredibly powerful way to not just memorize the meanings, but to also internalize them on like a cellular level. So my advice really is just to use other sensory tools like music to connect with the archetypes. So if you're interested in using this tool and giving it a try, go ahead and check out the link in the show notes, okay? All right. Next question. Hi, Sarah. Hi. Can you share your opinion on the court cards? I have a few decks that offer alternative interpretations of the court cards, but the inherent hierarchy has always felt undeniable and problematic to me. How do you work with a divination system that reflects oppressive hierarchical power structures while also keeping your practice decolonial and intersectional? Okay. Fundamentally, tarot is a tool that supports us in working with and through the human condition, right? And there's no way for us to address the human condition, let alone have conversations about decolonization and intersectionality, without talking about power. What's tricky about this is that we have to separate our moral judgments about power from the reality of its existence, right? Similarly to how talking about race doesn't inherently make you racist, talking about and acknowledging the existence of power and power dynamics and power structures, that doesn't automatically mean that you're like a power-hungry colonizer. Like, it's just illogical, right? Like, you know, talking about something doesn't necessarily make you the thing. So let's start there. Now, over the years, I've also noticed a lot of new decks coming out with like different iterations of the court cards. And these iterations often seek to flatten the power dynamics that are present in the Rider-Waite-Smith tarot deck. I just see like a concerted effort being made to reimagine these cards through a more horizontal lens, a more horizontal power structure. And there's nothing inherently wrong with this. I do think it's important for us to be able to reimagine power structures and to also adjust our tools to better fit our image for a liberated world. So there's nothing wrong with this practice, but I do have some things to say about that. Tarot is an incredible tool, not just for strategizing our way through interlocking systems of oppression, but also reimagining what shared power can look like. So again, for the record, I don't think that there's anything particularly wrong about reimagining and redefining the court cards in this way, but I do think that this is kind of a both and situation. So let's talk about that. One of the things that we've talked about throughout this podcast has been about how like whiteness and white supremacy infiltrates these spaces, right? And these practices. And
to be fair, to a certain degree, it makes sense because of the historical origins of tarot, the lineage of tarot, right? To a certain degree, it makes sense. And we are not talking about that. We're talking about whiteness, which is a whole different ballgame. And so with regards to this,
white fragility is no exception to this, right? So one of the ways that white fragility tends to show up in movement spaces of any kind, and this also includes movement spaces that are rooted in esoteric practices, right? One of the ways that white fragility tends to show up is through the disowning of power, right? There's a lot of like shame that kind of like wraps around this idea, this concept of power and of like having power, right? And when I speak about the disowning of power, I'm talking about structural power, not necessarily personal power. And to that end, I just want to say some of the deepest organizational harm that I've experienced personally has been through the hands of white people not imposing power over me necessarily, but of white people attempting to distance themselves from the power that they have.
And this, of course, extends to community harm and interpersonal harm too. So not just like organizational harm.
Now, to be fair, this is often like a misguided attempt at allyship, right? But what these folks often fail to realize in that moment is that disowning power is not the same thing as redistributing it. Pretending like you don't have the power that you have, pretending like hierarchical systems are obsolete in your world while simultaneously benefiting from them, yeah. If anything, that's kind of a jerk move because it puts the responsibility of power onto the shoulders of those who have the least of it, right? Which is incredibly unfair. All this to say, I think the court cards exist in part to help us deal with the reality of power. This may be an unpopular take, and I am certainly open to good faith rebuttals around this, but I personally don't think that hierarchy is inherently oppressive. It's what we do with that hierarchy that actually matters. Hierarchy is just a structure, right? It's not a neutral structure. I'm not claiming that, but it's a structure that can provide clarity around roles, and it can work to support a healthy operational system, for example, right? I also come from multiple cultures that uphold a certain level of respect and regard for elders and the wisdom of long-term experience. And that reverence exists within a hierarchical structure. Now, the point where things start to, like, you know, turn and become sour and become problematic is when these hierarchies are, number one, non-consensual, and number two, when they become a way to devalue people. So when we attach someone's position within a hierarchy to that person's inherent value and worth, that is where things become sticky and dehumanizing and oppressive. And that is my opinion. That's my opinion. Okay. All in all, not talking about power doesn't make it go away. We have to deal with it. And I think that the court cards actually give us that opportunity. So thank you so much for this question. All right, moving right along to the next one. Do you have any suggestions for using tarot to engage in ancestor work, especially for those of us who are disconnected from our family of origin, but want to spiritually connect with the lineage? Okay, cool. So how do you use tarot to do ancestor work? Let's talk about concretes. I'm not sure, you know, what exactly your ancestral practice looks like. So, you know, do know that these suggestions are adaptable, you know, use your own discernment around this. But one of the things that I like to do is place one of the major arcana cards or one of the court cards on my ancestor altar as sort of a stand-in for my unknown ancestors. For example, starting a business has and continues to challenge me on this, like, deeply spiritual level. And I don't necessarily have a lot of folks around me that I can turn to for advice. At one point, a little while back, I was just, like, really struggling to find the right tax person. And I remember working really closely with the King and Queen of Pentacles, almost as though I was working with specific ancestors within my lineage who I don't know, but who are, like, really good at this stuff during their time in Earth School. And I found this to be a super helpful way to just call upon and connect with my unknown, but, you know, business savvy ancestors, which felt and, you know, continues to feel very comforting and holding as I do things that stretch me beyond my comfort zone. So many of us, particularly Black Americans, right, within the context of the United States, within a US context, so many of us don't have access to our family history, including me, let alone photos. So using the cards as a stand-in for, you know, the kinds of, like, ancestor portraits that you might put on your altar, using the cards as a stand-in for that has felt like a really nice way to bridge some of these gaps. So, yeah, thanks for the question, and I really hope this helps. Moving on, next question. Do you have any tips for creating and or choosing a spread? You know, this is an interesting question to me because while I do have a signature card spread that I use when reading for my clients, I don't necessarily use spreads when I'm pulling cards for myself. I kind of just start talking to my spirits and I pull as I'm in conversation with them until I feel like an internal click that signals like I've pulled enough. And then what I do is I group these cards together in a way that helps me to just visually organize the information presented to me. A tarot spread is more or less a way to just visually organize data. I think that all of our brains work in uniquely magical ways, so what makes sense to me may not make sense to you. For me, the vast majority of traditional spreads, like the Celtic cross spread, for example, it just doesn't really work for me. So my advice for adopting new spreads and creating your own spread is just to be clear about what you're investigating. If you're clear about your intention, then you can be clear in your question. And that clarity can really help guide how you organize the information that's in front of you, right? I do want to invite you to check out this book with a really long title. It's W.E.B. Du Bois's Data Portraits, Visualizing Black America, The Color Line at the Turn of the 20th Century. Okay, it's a mouthful, but it's a really cool book. In it, you're going to find a ton of examples of how W.E.B. Du Bois visually organized complex data. And it might be helpful inspiration for you to just flip through that book to see all the creative ways that data can be organized visually. And hopefully this can translate over into how you organize cards for your spread. All right, I hope this helps. Next question. If you have a lot of decks to choose from, how do you select the appropriate deck for a reading? You know how you go to different friends for different types of support? Choosing the appropriate deck is kind of like that. I personally feel like each deck comes with its own personality, and then when that personality mingles with your ashe, your energy, that's when it really comes to life and begins to speak in its distinct voice. Different tarot decks have different strengths and drawbacks, right? There are some decks that are incredibly helpful for when you need a no-nonsense answer or plan, while others may be great for when you need more emotional holding and validation, right? This isn't a hard and fast rule, but generally, I've found that oracle decks tend to offer more of that emotional holding than tarot decks. That's why I like to break them out when I do shadow integration readings. So, you know, there's that. This isn't to say that like one style or personality, if you will, is like better than the other, but they do serve different functions and they just land differently. With this, I'd say that, you know, the only way to really get to know your deck is to spend time with it. And there isn't really a shortcut around this part. So, you know, just keep that in mind. But as you get to know your deck, I would also recommend looking into the artists and writers who designed your deck, because that can also offer invaluable information about the deck's origin story. And as is the case with humans, objects also embody the energy of its origin story. So being intentional about not just what you buy, but who you buy it from is, to me, an essential consideration. Yeah, it's a combination of doing some self-reflection, or, you know, if you're reading for a friend or a client, just like asking them about what kind of support they're actually asking for and getting really clear about that first. And then from there, you can better discern which deck is going to be the most helpful for whatever situation you're dealing with. So, yeah, thank you so much for your question. Moving right along. Next question. When you're reading your own cards, what are the best ways to distinguish major themes from minor themes? As a general rule of thumb, if you get a major arcana card in your reading, that's probably going to be the main indicator of the major themes, right? But there's actually a ton of other ways to investigate themes in your spread. I like to look out for any colors, elements, tools, suits, planets, animals, and beings that show up more than once or really prominently, okay? Because that can offer some clues to help you discern major themes from minor ones. But moreover, it helps you understand the context for whatever major theme it is that you're working with. For example, if you pull the Justice card, which is a card that we don't immediately associate with matters of the heart, unless we're talking about like, you know, like legally binding paperwork or something. But you know, if the rest of your spread has a bunch of other cards from the Suit of Cups, it's likely that the themes of the Justice card will play out in your relationships and other heart-centered matters. For me personally, I don't necessarily make the division between major and minor themes because I just believe that if the card came out, then it's significant. But it's helpful for me to think of it like pouring water into different multicolored glass cups, okay? So let's say we have a big pitcher of water, and that big pitcher of water represents the Justice card, Okay. And then with the Justice card, you have a bunch of minor arcana that's surrounding it. And the minor arcana is represented by these multicolored glass cups. So if you pour water into different glasses, because the glasses are tinted in different colors, the water is going to look like the color of the glass, right? And so I think that that's kind of how major and minor arcana cards work together, is like you have this big major theme, but by putting it into different contexts, you get different shades of that particular theme. So shit, I hope that makes sense, but that's how I think of it. Overall, if something feels like a footnote, it probably is, just, you know, for now, right? But also keep in mind, sometimes what you might consider to be a minor theme in a reading, it could be foreshadowing. So as you get more comfortable with reading cards, I invite you to maybe unpack that dichotomy between major and minor themes a little bit, because it might help you to feel less stuck in trying to figure out what is and is not the most important, okay? It's all context. And in my book, all context matters. Thank you so much for this question. Next question. When I have a confusing spread, I'm unsure if my interpretation is accurate or if I'm just trying to force an interpretation that is favorable. How do you know when you're getting a quote-unquote real message versus when you're trying to see your reading through rose-colored glasses? Okay. First things first. Confusion is often how our spirits get us to slow down. Sometimes we just need to let things play out a bit before we can fully investigate. So I just want to, you know, plant that seed before I go into this. Now, there have been times when I've done readings for myself with a certain question in mind, and I get a set of cards that feels, you know, peculiar or confusing at the beginning, but as I pull a few more cards, I soon realize that the first group of cards was confusing because I had essentially like cut my spirits off mid-sentence. So when in doubt, just ask for clarification, okay? Other times I've gotten confused because I'm getting a response to a question that I should be asking, not the question that I'm actively asking, all right? And then there are, you know, other times where my cards may not be answering my question, but they're simply like offering validation for what I'm feeling. Sometimes your spirits are just like, damn, bitch, you've been through a lot. I see you. So getting back to the heart of the question though, for me, if I find myself asking the same question over and over again with different decks, and this is the important part, if I ask the same question over and over again, hoping for a different answer, well, that's a pretty telltale sign that I'm doing the thing, right? I'm trying to put on the rose-colored glasses and like contort the reading in my favor. Ultimately, as with most things, it comes down to intention, and you have to be honest with yourself about what your intention actually is. You might be able to lie to yourself temporarily, but like, you know, your spirits aren't going to, like your cards are not going to lie to you. So the question that you might ask yourself if you find yourself in this predicament is, you know, am I trying to get clarity? Or am I trying to substantiate a fantasy? I know that this is like a super annoying answer, but what can I say? You already know. Like you already know. You already know. Okay. So now a little bit more advice. This doesn't work for everyone, but I personally like to keep confusing spreads out in the open where I can revisit them over a long stretch of time, right? There's something about just like seeing the same images over and over again that kind of helps you to make connections that you may not have made when you initially saw them. So you can like leave them out on your desk or your coffee table, somewhere where it won't be super distracting, but you know, you can see it throughout the day. You might even consider using it as like a anchor, like a visual anchor for your meditation practice. Like you know, don't necessarily think about the meanings of the cards, but just visualize the cards in your mind's eye. In either case, when it comes to confusing readings, more often than not, time has been the remedy. Anyway, I hope that this helps, and thank you for asking this question. Let's move along. What's the best way to break in a new deck? Cool. So my favorite way to connect with a new deck is to sleep with it under my pillow. Of course, you know, do this after you appropriately cleanse your deck, but there's something about putting it under your pillow that really expedites and amplifies the connection. It's almost like, I don't know, not everyone's an animist, but like I am. So it's almost like the spirit of the deck gets to take a look at your dreams, right? Like while you're asleep and all the other subconscious shit that you're trying to work out in your sleep. And it, honestly, this works like a charm for me. It works every time. I also like to do this when some of my older decks are starting to feel like energetically dusty, like, you know, when the cards don't quite hit like they used to. So just put the deck under your pillow, sleep with it for anywhere between like 1 to 3 or maybe 3 to 7 nights, depending. And I mean, it just, I swear, it makes all the difference for me. So try it and let me know how it goes. All right, y'all, this is our last question. And for this question, I'm actually going to be using a musical example. So this one is for all the music nerds, all right? The question is, what's the deal with reversals? Some practitioners seem to read them while other practitioners assume that the card is the card regardless of its position. Seems kind of polarizing, and I'm curious to know your take on this. Thanks. Okay, thank you for this question, because this is something that I've thought about a lot over the years. So, okay. When it comes to working with spiritual systems and ancient technologies, like divination, like tarot, it can be really tricky to negotiate that line that sometimes separates convention from your intuition. These things aren't diametrically opposed to each other. Conventions can support your intuitive knowing and vice versa, but there does come a point where conventions begin to grate against what works for you personally. If we're talking about this during an office hours session, I'd kick back to you a question about your own practice. Namely, does reading reversals in your practice feel additive, or does it feel distracting? Like the tarot itself, conventions are, at best, epistemological tools, right? Meaning they're meant to be instruments of knowledge production and a method for cultivating understanding. But ultimately, these are just guidelines, right? So it does take personal reflection on your end to investigate whether or not these conventions land as helpful guidelines or as dogma. I think one of the worries that folks have about this is that they don't want to, like, inadvertently misread a spread or lose important chunks of information because they decided to not read a reversal. And that's a legitimate concern. But to this, I say, just make a choice around it, okay? And your spiritual court is going to find a way to deliver messages in a language that you understand. So if you decide to read reversals, your spirits will take that into account. Same thing if you don't. So, you know, I just hope that we can put that particular worry to rest. I personally do read reversals because my epistemological framework for tarot, how I understand and study the craft, often mirrors how I approach my art practice. The way that I read images and the way that I listen for meaning is 1,000% informed by how I work with the mediums of like music and choreography and visual art and so on. And so that's my personal style, and that's my entry point into tarot, is actually through my art practice. I often describe the cards as a kind of storyboard that anchors the messages I receive in a cohesive visual narrative. And the, I guess I can call it like, I'm using air quotes, the movement, quote unquote, that I perceive when I go from card to card, frame by frame, that is its own kind of choreography. So the physical position of the cards tells its own story in the way that an inverted frame might when we watch a film, for example. So to answer my own question that I posed to you, dear listener, is reading reversals has and continues to be additive for me rather than distracting, and that's why I use them. Now, I do have another example that might help to drive this point home. I'm going to talk music theory a little bit, okay? And I'm going to really do my best to avoid getting too jargony, but this is the example that helps me to understand why reversals are so significant for me. I need to talk about this with a keyboard, so we're going to move over to that station right now. Hi, okay, so we are in the corner of my space where I can play this, where I can play a keyboard. So I'm in front of my keyboard, so let's just plunk out some notes as I talk about tarot, okay? So in Western or, you know, European classical music, because that's my trade, when you have a cluster of three or more notes sounding at the same time, you would call that a chord, okay? So let's say that we're working in the key of C major, okay? Let me go ahead and play that for you. Let's get like, let's anchor ourselves in a sonic home base, all right? So we're working in C major, right? So this is C major. So that's our key, okay? This is the key of C. And that's our key, and also that what I just played is a C major chord or a C major triad. All right, it's made up of three notes, C, E, and G, okay? So C is considered to be the root, all right? That's the root of this triad. It's the root of the chord, okay? It's the foundation, it's home base, it is the lowest note of the triad, okay? We call this next note above, E, the third of the chord, because the distance between C and E is what we call a major third. Okay, that's the harmony that you're hearing. Now, the last note of this C major triad is G. Okay, this is what we call the fifth of the chord, because the distance between C and G is what we call a perfect fifth interval. Okay, now follow me. It's going somewhere, I swear. Okay, now when you hear a C major chord in root position, this means that the root of the chord, C, is the lowest sounding note. Okay, so this is a C major chord in root position. Okay, that's C. C is the lowest sounding note, okay? And we would consider a chord in root position as like a card that's in the upright position, okay? So let's say this is like an upright tarot card. This is what it sounds like. Okay, but if we were to move this C, the lowest note, up an octave, so from here to there, okay, we're going to move this C from here to here up an octave, okay, but everything else is going to stay the same. The E is the same, the G is the same. We just happen to move the C all the way up here, okay? So now the lowest note of the chord is that middle E note, okay? So the third, and then the fifth, G, and at the very top we got that C. So we're still working with the C major triad, all right? The only difference is now this C major chord is in what's called first inversion, and it sounds like this, all right? Now, it's a subtle difference, so let's compare side by side. So this is a C major chord in root position, and then this is a C major chord in what we call first inversion, okay? All right, you hear that difference? But it doesn't stop there. You can actually invert this chord again by moving this E up an octave, like you did with the C earlier. So you're moving it from here, that's that E, You're going to move it all the way up here. Okay. So now with the root of the chord, C is up here. And then the E is now up an octave up here. But the G stays the same. Okay. So now you have a C major chord that's in second inversion. And this is what it sounds like. The lowest note of the chord is G, followed by the C, then the E. Okay, so let's compare again side by side. So you have C major in root position. Then you have C major in first inversion. And then you have C major in second inversion. Okay, that's about as technical as we're gonna get. So what does all this have to do with reading reversals? Because a lot of my psychic gifts stem from clairaudience, so clear hearing, musical inversions are like reversed cards for me. I approach them in a really similar way. When you play a first inversion or second inversion chord, you're working with the same three notes, right? Throughout. But when you rearrange the structure, when you flip that chord on its head, you also fundamentally change the function of that chord. What do I mean by this? Well, even though you're working with the same three notes, the inversions don't function in the exact same way that the root chord does. You typically would end a song or a musical piece on a root position chord, okay? This sonically indicates like, okay, we're at the end of the, you know, we are at the end of the piece. Okay, and then this feels like we're done, right? Sometimes you can end things on a first inversion chord if I'm remembering my music theory correctly. Like, it's not like, you know, I guess conventions exist so that you can break them, but like, it's not very typical to end things on a first inversion, and you definitely don't end things on a second inversion chord. And again, like these are like conventions, right? You can always break the rules, but that's the convention that I was taught. So reversals are they operate in the same way for me, where it's just like you're working with the same elements and the same themes of the card, but its position changes the flavor and most importantly, the function of that card. And therefore, it shifts how we contextualize it within the larger scope of your spread. It also brings a different context to your spread as well. So that's why I read reversals. It just looks and sounds different to me, but that's not necessarily the case for everyone. It doesn't make sense for everyone, and that's totally fine. But you know, if you're wondering why I read inversions or why I read reversals, it's because I hear the message differently in a similar way. So I hope that makes sense. And I hope that was helpful. And I also hope that it wasn't too like weirdly jargony, but you know, thanks to the music nerds and everyone else who stuck around for that explanation. Okay. Alrighty. That brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you all so, so much for tuning in, chiming in, and for just being a part of this growing community of intersectional, decolonial, and radically loving students and practitioners of tarot. If you'd like to support this work and the person who makes it, I invite you to subscribe to the pod, follow me on Instagram at snakeskin.tarot, rate and share this episode with your tarot study groups. No act of support is too small. Monetary donations are always gratefully accepted. And as a reminder, it really does help to keep this body of work free to the public. So I just want to extend a really heartfelt thank you to each and every person who has and has continued to donate to keep this going. Again, as a reminder, for updates about the pod and about my services, and to also be the first to receive exclusive offers and the occasional present from me, don't forget to sign up for Snakeskin Tarot News. All relevant links are going to be in the show notes. All right, folks, until next time, please, please take extraordinary care of yourselves and each other. These are extraordinary times, okay? Now more than ever, we really need to remember our inherent interconnectivity.
So please stay in touch and we will talk soon. Bye for now.